So comes the trial of Whitey Bulger. Monday, August 12, 2013, Whitey Bulger was found guilty on racketeering charges, guilty on 31 of 32 counts. Federal jury linked him to 11 murders. He had been accused of involvement in 19 murders, with those killings taking place from 1973 to 1985. The jury found that the government failed to prove Bulger was involved in 7 of the murders, and jurors had no finding in 1 murder. We should point out that in the 11 murders that were linked to him, Roger Wheeler was one of them. Mike, how did you feel about this verdict?
You know, I was not surprised by the verdict at all. I even to the point of some of those not guilty on the murders, just because of the weakness of the cases that the prosecution had. Very hard to prosecute a decades-old murder without forensic evidence or some real key other than bad guy testimony. In the Wheeler murder, it was a good day for me. I felt good about that. Then immediately thereafter, I have questions on whether or not Tulsa, Oklahoma will see Whitey Bulger. As of a couple of years ago, when he got caught, the district attorney was very adamant that we would see him here and he would be prosecuted in Tulsa for the murder he committed on Mr. Wheeler in our community. So, you know, immediately thereafter, there was a question brought up to me that we may not prosecute him here.
And that's because of funds, isn't it? Would it take $250,000 or so?
Well, I would think it'd probably be $200,000 or $300,000. Luckily, those kind of decisions were so far above my pay grade, was never an issue for me. Dollars and cents are something that I never factored into my work product, because you take that to a lower level and say, we'll never prosecute this here because of a murder, so therefore, I'm not really going to bust my butt here. It's a tough message to put out there. Although, I totally understand somebody has to consider that. But it's not me. Don't want it to be me. And everybody knows where I stand on that.
But we should note that Pam Wheeler, the daughter of Roger Wheeler, has said we shouldn't spend another dime on this thug.
Well, I totally appreciate her opinion on that. Everybody has one. And the Wheeler family's opinion is mixed at best. But this crime was perpetrated on the city of Tulsa also. Telex went away. Thousands of people lost very high-paying jobs. This community suffered a loss. It's more than just the family needs some resolution and some closure.
And then there was a point where you thought perhaps you were going to be called as a witness, and that didn't happen.
I knew I would not be called as a prosecution witness, because that can of worms that I hold is too big to open up. It would have turned into a sideshow. I made it very clear to the defense attorneys of Whitey Bulger that under no uncertain circumstances would I have any information that would help him out. They also know that that cuts both ways. I can say something relative to the FBI corruption, which may help him, but I can also say that I was intimately involved in this investigation and have facts on him that go as deep as digging to China. They didn't want to get me out there to be able to expose some of those facts, because I just think I'm a live wire in this thing, and people know to stand back from a live wire, and they made a good decision.
So as you were able to follow the trial, and you didn't go there, do you have more facts and information than the trial dealt with?
Oh, absolutely. That was a sliver of information that got presented in that trial. And a sliver of information on each charge was presented in that trial. But the Wheeler case, again, has been referred to by Whitey as the Holy Trinity. It was the gem, if you will, of all these murders. I mean, so many tragic murders. But Wheeler drove this train. That information that I have had, whatever it is, whatever question you ask about Wheeler, I can end up talking about days on those facts. And I'm the only one that has that depth of knowledge and that experience, that longevity in the case. They just didn't want to take that chance.
He referred to him as the Holy Trinity. This was because Wheeler was clean. He wasn't a mobster. He wasn't of the mob. He was clean, and that's why this was so
right. They knew this would come back. All these other mobsters that they killed and got away with those murders for years, one of the reasons why Brian Halloran didn't accept the hit on this murder was that he recognized it was a Holy Trinity very early on and said, there's no way we can reach this far out across the country and kill a guy this clean and not get a lot of heat for it. So he he made a good decision.
Why did they use that term, Holy Trinity?
I don't know. I feel very confident in where that information came from. I know from my sources that the Wheeler case, Whitey knew it was his undoing. Whitey kept up with it. Whitey hated me. I didn't talk for days on all those kind of little things, but he knew it was a thorn in his side, and obviously it was.
Inside the courtroom, Johnny Mortarano, the hit man, the man who pulled the trigger to murder Roger Wheeler. And because of Whitey's betrayal, Mortarano cooperated with the FBI, and as we've stated earlier in our interview, he served 12 years of 14. You haven't talked to him since the trial, have you?
Not since the trial. I'm sure I'll speak with him here in another month or so when I go to Boston for the sentencing.
That's November 13th. Whitey's due back in court, and he faces 30 years to life. But it's interesting, when Johnny Mortarano was asked about certain murders, he'd just say, "I shot him," or, "We broadsided him." When innocent people, a young woman and a teenage boy, were killed, then he said, "I wanted to shoot myself." He didn't seem to show a whole lot of remorse, but he did show emotion when he talked about learning that Whitey was an informant for the FBI. That's when he said, "It broke my heart." Steve Flemmy had also become an informant, and Mortarano said, "I was beside myself with it." He said, "These were my partners in crime, my best friends, my children's godfather." He even named his youngest son James Stephen in honor of both of them. That's where the emotion came out.
In spending a lot of time with Mortarano, he is all about loyalty. He is all about that friendship and the responsibility that went with it. And in his world, friendship, a part of it was, "Never rat on me and I'll never rat on you." And then when that happened, his world really fell apart. I mean, it kind of likens you to a hitman that needs counseling, because it shook him to the core. And he made a huge decision in being a government witness, which totally went against his upbringing, his screwed up values, that kind of stuff.
Afterward, the jury spoke. It's interesting to notice the emotion that they went through. Some were shaking, they said, as they stood in the jury box and heard the verdict read. That's how emotionally, and I suppose you do in many murder or other cases as well, but particularly this one. Jurors lost weight, developed headaches, and had nightmares as a result of this.
This was a 50-yard line seat to probably one of the most evil criminal empires of our generations. It probably spans two or three generations. These people saw some of the most graphic photographs. They heard some of the most bone-chilling graphic testimony. I think they became a part of it. I'm certain that some of those folks probably need some counseling over the things. What they were exhibiting was post-traumatic stress syndrome. One murder is bad enough, but you compound that by 19 and then all the other threats of violence and the fact that this guy could reach out across the country and have people killed. They would strangle people just because, yank their teeth out. These people were the devil, and they witnessed that. Hats off to them for doing the right thing. It was tough, but it gives you some confidence in our jury system.
Right. And then probably also would throw you is to see the cold-heartedness of Mortarano and maybe Flemmy, too. That was it. I shot him. To see that happening as a juror, you're not around these people. I mean, just that moment.
Absolutely. And then also the terrible taste in your mouth that some of these people are walking free today that were involved in these murders. These hard, hard decisions that are made by prosecutors are very difficult because, like our old district attorney David Moss used to say, these plays aren't cast with the church choir. They're cast in hell. You got to have an inside man most of the time.
One juror said the graphic testimony about Bulger and his friends prompted jurors who own guns to take precautions at home. They said that actually they loaded their guns at night because they were afraid of personal injury.
I can imagine that. And then halfway through the trial, the potential witness, Stephen Rakes, who got his liquor store extorted by Whitey and Kevin Weeks, winds up dead. The resolution of that really didn't come out till maybe even to the deliberation time, where he was actually murdered by another person that wanted to use the timing of this in the Bulger trial to kind of throw a red herring out there. These people were just like human test rats with all this trauma and evil thrown their way. The jury was exposed to that information. All of the country was exposed to that information. You couldn't log on to the internet without seeing story after story for a few days. So the resolution of that investigation didn't come till very late in the trial, or maybe even into the deliberation stage, that it was somebody else that murdered him. Because everybody thought, oh, surely Whitey murdered this guy or had this guy murdered. Didn't turn out that way, but it did throw a curveball to everybody.
Yeah. Interesting. Whitey wrote a letter from prison, and it was posted on radaronline.com. He admits he has a lot of time on his hands, spending 24 hours a day in solitary confinement. He drops hints we haven't seen the last of his legal battles. I don't know what that's all about. How any attorney, I suppose where he'd get the money to fund an attorney for an appeal is beyond me.
Well, I think the taxpayers will pay for that appeal. Whitey's going to run out of time. He's going to die an old man in jail. That's just the way it is. What some people are suspecting is that maybe Whitey may take the stand in his sentencing phase where there's going to be some testimony. You know, the testimony would be for maybe a lighter sentence. But he's in a fantasy that the fight's still going. He hadn't realized that it's over for him.
And then he writes, he misses the peaceful years he spent in hiding in Santa Monica. Apparently his girlfriend, he likes, in my 16 years in the run, were the happiest years of my life and hers, referring to his girlfriend, Catherine Grigg. If I met Catherine at a younger age, I would have had a better life. I wonder if she would have turned him from crime. And then when he talks about the sentencing, he says, I expect the worst is yet to come. I'll deal with it and welcome the peace.
Maybe there's a little bit of recollection, retrospection, all that stuff there. But the facts are in. He's an evil son of a bitch, and he's going to get the maximum penalty here. I could only wish that just for the sake of having the final say, that he would wind up with the death penalty in the state of Oklahoma. Whether or not he'd live long enough for it to be carried out really wouldn't matter to me. It's like driving a stake in the heart of somebody evil. And I think that we should have that opportunity to do it.
Because Massachusetts doesn't have the death penalty.
Massachusetts doesn't. The federal government under these statutes don't have it. Now, Florida has it, but I think they're going to back away from prosecuting him down there.
So that would be the only reason then for Oklahoma to bring him back is that we could have the death penalty.
Absolutely. The guy deserves it. Look at what he's done. Look at these aggravating circumstances. He killed potential witnesses against him. It fits every factor that the state law has set forth to qualify him for the death penalty. Just because he's old doesn't exempt him.
Well, the Wheeler family, I think, and Tulsa is fortunate to have had you on the force, that you had that tenacity. You had that Columbo feeling back and forth to continue it on, because I'm quite certain maybe much of the investigation of the Wheeler case might have gone away had it not been for your persistence.
Well, thank you for saying that, and I certainly was pleasured to have such a wonderful job for so many years, and I just made it to the finish line. I'm maybe the last man standing on this deal. I think I'm the most tenured guy that's involved in this deal. These guys in Massachusetts, maybe when junior high school, when I started on this thing, they've done a wonderful job, but I was there from soup to nuts.